Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then we consider what you know of the news of the day. Tonight, we continue our look at the postponement of the tabling of the anti-party hopping bill. This, coupled with the government's motion to extend the detention period of SOSMA, has now sparked speculation about the viability of the MOU. Several UMNO leaders have said that Pakatan Harapan's rejection of the SOSMA motion was tantamount to violating the MOU. Is the MOU and its reforms, including the anti-party hopping bill, now in jeopardy? Let's ask our first guest today, former Deputy Speaker of Dewan Rakyat and UMNO MP of Pengerang, Datuk Sri Azalina Uthman Said. Datuk Sri, thank you for being on the show. I'm just wondering whether, in your opinion, the reasons for the delay of the anti-party hopping bill has to do with the power struggles within this coalition government, meaning that it's really not about the bill anymore. It's about the legislation being used to sabotage the success of the MOU, because as you know, there are many who want to see it terminated to pave the way for snap elections.
Thank you so much, Melissa, for inviting me. I think one of the biggest question is that, is the MOU a legal binding document? I think a lot of people have forgotten it's just an understanding between the government and the political parties. And how the MOU was being derived or created was definitely due to the change of the Prime Minister. And you know very well that the support for the existing Prime Minister today is also based or tied in with the MOU. I think one of the major clauses in the MOU, you cannot deny the fact that there is no vote of confidence will be taken against the Prime Minister in return for the Constituency Development Fund for all the other MPs that signed the MOU. Between government and the opposition. And opposition, I believe, is not all oppositions, only of, I think in numbers under PH would be 88, if I'm not mistaken. You can correct me if I'm wrong. And the whole objective of the MOU was to make sure that some of the laws would be passed, especially for budget, and it was being derived during the period of budget time. And then secondly, I think if you look into the clause of the MOU, it has certain expectation for the government to do. And I believe the government has done almost all except for 80%. The only issue in hand is, of course, that it's also taken me by surprise, is the anti-hopping law. Because from the conversation and the discussion of the MPs for the past few months, the anti-hopping law vis-a-vis the bill itself has been, I believe it's been successfully drafted. Because the engagement by the minister with all the party representatives has taken place. And I'm representing Barisan Nasional / UMNO, although 34% of the cabinet members are below 12, consisting from Barisan Nasional, and/or UMNO, MIC, MCA. But the point in hand is that I represented Barisan Nasional as head for the legal committee for Barisan Nasional. And we have been very consistent. If you look at the state election for Melaka, state election for Johor, and also the speeches by the Deputy President and also the President during the UMNO General Assembly, we have been very consistent on the existence of the anti-hopping law. Of course, the government comes back by saying that they can't put it up this session due to the interpretation of the meaning of anti-hopping. Or the meaning of hopping, or maybe in simple language, is the meaning of a frog. What do you call a frog colony? Is it frog colony or lompat kata? Doesn't matter how you describe it. But I was kind of surprised because when the politicians, the representative of the political party sat down for the past few months, I think we came to a junction of agreement on how we define it. As you very well know, for a fact, I have been very consistent on the recall remedy. So I submitted my private member's motion, already got kicked out twice. But I felt that a recall remedy would really settle a lot of interpretation challenges. As you know, I have already described the five kind of scenario for hopping. For example, this issue on you independently move, or you move as a coalition, or you've been terminated constructively, or the party punishes you. But I've also emphasized the fact that the most important element is that the members of parliament in our country, the Westminster system, is being protected by giving immunity, whereby we cannot be punished by our party if we're crossing the floors on certain policies and issues. And I think the whole MOU was derived so that the opposition, the expectation of opposition is to oppose. But because of the MOU, the opposition is not supposed to oppose. So that's why a lot of laws for the past few months since the MOU has been created passed successfully. With the numbers that, as you know, right now, the numbers of MPs that we are left with is 220 divided by 310 on both sides. So the movement or the mobility of the support for the Prime Minister under the Constitution that gets the confidence of the existing MPs on record. And he has got that number. What the strategy of the MOU, I believe, was government then is to make sure a lot of laws can be passed and not have the similar scenario what transpired during the SOSMA bill. What happened was that the amendment to the SOSMA Act, there was not enough numbers. It was 84 to 86. So, of course, the question that you need to ask is not on the anti-hopping law alone, because the anti-hopping law is something that the government has confirmed. I think as of on Wednesday, the Prime Minister has confirmed with the opposition representative that he will call for a special sitting in Parliament during the Ramadan period to do the anti-hopping law. So now the issue is not may not be the anti-hopping law now. The issue in hand that you're facing now is the future of the MOU. I can say for a fact, as far as my party is concerned, Barisan Nasional UMNO, as of now, I don't know what happens tomorrow, is that they do not want MOU 2.0. They don't want a renewal or a continuance of the MOU. That is as far as Barisan Nasional and UMNO is concerned. As of today, as I'm speaking to you, but I don't know what happens, you know, politics. No permanent friends, no permanent enemies. Right.
But the space of hours, things can change. I completely agree.
Yeah.
But
that it is exciting, isn't it? It's really exciting. It's like you don't get this sort of drama in Malaysia, do you?
It's a developing story, breaking news.
This is real politics in action. I really enjoy because I don't know what's going to happen every second at Parliament sitting.
Okay, if I may follow up on what you said. You said, as of now, there is no desire for a renewal of the MOU. So MOU 2.0, that proposal is not palatable at the moment. But is the current MOU still in play? We've heard calls from UMNO President Dato' Sri Zaid Hamidi saying that, well, maybe it's time now to call off the MOU. Is the current MOU in jeopardy?
Well, I think it depends on who calls the shot, because the MOU was derived from the opposition bloc with the government of the day. And the government of the day is represented by political parties with the government faction. But the government of the day, my political party, is a minority government in a coalition government, which means to say the representative of UMNO Barisan Nasional doesn't really call the shots 100%. I mentioned earlier that we are only 34%. We're less than 12. So what I'm trying to say is that at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what the political party is called for, the representative of the political party, maybe we can look at two separate entities between the government representative and the political party representative. I mean, the General Assembly itself, if you observe, my party is very consistent in the position of the next general election, very consistent in our relationship with other coalition partners. We go head-on in reference to the state election in Melaka in Johor. So you know very well the party's position. But the representative of the party in the government may look at a different perspective, taking into account it's a coalition government. And you know very well, I've been saying this so many times, if you look at all my write-up, I've been very consistent. A coalition government doesn't last longer than 22 months historically, because it can't. Because the principles and the policy and the ideology of all the political parties are different. So sometimes it's just like, you know, it could be a marriage of convenience if you want to give a very easy analogy. But okay, this marriage may not last long. It may go for divorce. It may go for the first tala or the talak tiga. It depends so much on the parties. Now, right, in reference to the MOU, you're looking at a 20% of things not being done yet, which is the anti-hopping law and the fixed term of the Prime Minister. Only that's not done yet. I think if I'm right on my analysis.
Passing the Parliamentary Services Act as well.
Yes,
as
passing Parliamentary Services.
So four more reforms.
But you must know that the sitting of Parliament is two more sitting, which is July sitting and the towards the end of the year sitting. So now, of course, in the standing order, the Ketua Majlis, which is the Prime Minister, is able to call for special sitting. So between now to July, which is the cut-off period, he may be able to call in as many sittings or special sitting that he wants to make sure that, you know, he fulfills his part of the commitment for the MOU on the terms of reference. Yeah, he can if he want to. Yeah.
So in your opinion, is it a given that the anti-party hopping law will be eventually passed? And can I just very quickly add an addendum to that question? I take your point that the MOU is not a legal binding contract, but if the MOU is terminated before its expiry, before all its reforms are implemented, might there be repercussions either politically or electorally?
Well, of course, number one, it's not a legal binding document. It could be seen as a morally binding document because it is like a gentleman's agreement. Now, the failure to fulfill the MOU, the assumption by most people is that, well, you know, maybe the government will be seen to be able to call for a general election. But if you really understand the concept of MOU, Melissa, it doesn't work that way. Okay, let me ask you this question. Why do you need the MOU in Parliament? Because you need the MPs to vote for law. It's a lawmaking platform, isn't it? So you need MPs to make laws, and especially during budget time, you need the support of numbers for budget. That's why in most Westminster system, they have the CDF, the Constituency Development Fund, or they have the CSA, which is the agreement whereby when you don't have enough numbers, the MPs will give you numbers in consideration to be getting funding assistance. That is how the numbers move, because, you know, sort of the demarcation is the fact that you give your support based on what is needed to be done on your side. Now, the failure of the MOU, I think a lot of people have forgotten, is that what can happen? Can the government be deemed to wrap itself up, pull the plug because of that failure? I don't know, because the way I look at it, I don't know legally. My belief is that the government can still stay if the government wants to stay. Because if you look at our constitution, I've written an article that says the right to fire, right to hire, right to fire for the Prime Minister. Because once you put him there, how are you going to pull the Prime Minister out unless Yang Mutuara Agong participate, whereby under the constitution, okay, he's asked for a dissolution of parliament. That is one way. But until and unless that is called for, the Prime Minister can still be the Prime Minister. Unless some laws that needed to be passed on the requirement of the 2/3, for example, constitutional amendment, he doesn't get the numbers. Now, that can be derived on an assumption that he's lost the majority support. But nevertheless, the way the constitution works today, it may not come to that conclusion. Now, of course, at the end of the day, political parties being pressured by political parties members may want to see a change. Because what happens in Johor is that the leaders or the Menteri Besar of Johor felt that he could not get adequate numbers in the Dewan Negeri. Because every time he has to keep bargaining for the numbers to pass law. So therefore, he calls for state election. But if the federal government today believes and still feel comfortable that they're able to run the government regardless of the existence of the MOU or the termination of the MOU, it's still their call. But of course, under the clause of the MOU, it does say that the government will lose support. But if you look at the MOU again, we say you look thoroughly at the MOU, it doesn't say that, you know, or pull the plug, call for election, withdrawal of the government, termination of the Prime Minister, deemed to be implied resignation. It doesn't say that. So, I still, I'm looking from a very different perspective of legal reading.
Well, as you said, this is a developing story. Things can happen very quickly in Malaysian politics, as we've come to know in the past few years. Thank you so much, Dato' Sri Azalina, for joining us on the show today. That was Dato' Sri Azalina of my side, MP for Pengerang and former Deputy Speaker of Johor Raya. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Joining me now is Tricia Yeo. She is the CEO of the think tank Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, better known by its acronym, IDEAS. Tricia, how are you making sense of everything that's happened recently, particularly in Parliament? Everything from the postponement of the anti-hopping bill, coupled with the government's defeat of the SOSMA motion. I mean, what is it signalling to you about the viability of the MOU and whether its promised reforms are now in jeopardy?
So I think if we trace back as to why the MOU was signed in the first place, and it's unprecedented in our history, it was essentially because we have currently a weak coalition government, and they needed to secure some additional votes, I suppose, so additional confidence, right? It's, so as you know, we also have called it a confidence and supply agreement, where the members of the opposition give some confidence to the government of the day, and in exchange, there are some reforms that are put on the table. I think, firstly, you know, I just want to state my recognition that it was very disappointing that the government had decided to postpone the tabling of the anti-hopping bill. Yes, now they've already come up to say that they are going to do it in a special sitting in the month of Ramadan. But this is basically after the month of March. So there were certain timelines that were put into the MOU as well. So I think when it came out in the first place, I remember saying very clearly that the timeline is actually rather short. I wasn't very confident that a lot of the things that were promised to be delivered by March could have been done by March. However, let's also accept that the MOU does not end in March. So the MOU is supposed to stretch all the way to July, right? June, July. So that's the timeline that I think everyone's expecting as well, a possible dissolution of Parliament. So while it's not great that it's been postponed, I think the fact that they've come back to say that there will be a special sitting, I think that's positive overall in terms of commitment to that particular thing on the anti-hopping law. The defeat of the SOSMA bill, again, it's unprecedented. It's the first time that the government has lost a block vote in Parliament. The other time that the government actually lost a vote was when PH put forward the amendments to the MA63 to restore the position of Sabah and Sarawak, but that would only have required a simple majority. So where does this leave us? I think, yeah, some people were saying that this means the opposition was not sincere to the MOU because it means that they were not supposed to vote against any of the motions of government. I think that's not fair either. I think if there are certain bills that come across as unconscionable from the opposition point of view, they should certainly state their views and make those views known, because defeating down a bill doesn't necessarily equate to defeating the government as a whole, right? It doesn't work that way. It's just to the extent of the bill concerned. And if, for example, they had supported the amendment of SOSMA, I think that would have been the unconscionable decision on their part. So how do we see all of this? Again, the MOU is not something that we've ever experienced before. So I think it's sort of like an experiment that both government and opposition are going into.
Okay, can I ask you, if it seemed to be an experiment, right? And you mentioned a bit earlier, it really was to shore up support for a weak coalition government. But if that is the case, then is it the future of Malaysian politics that coalition governments just don't work without MOUs? We've seen many people want this MOU to be terminated. They want to pave the way for snap elections. Is that what has taught us about the process of this MOU, particularly about negotiating, about getting public buy-in, about the political and electoral cost of having an MOU? I'm just wondering, Tricia, what that's taught you in particular about the nature of compromise and the nature of bipartisanship in Malaysian politics?
I continue to be like a true believer in bipartisanship or cross-partisanship, as we would say, because there's not really a strong two coalition government anymore. It's a collection of different parties. I think that while we are all very used to a secure and stable government that we had under the BN all the way up to 2018, I do think that this is the future, and we need to start getting comfortable with negotiations, with compromises, and actually take advantage of the fact that there can be potentially minority governments. And what can we use? What kind of opportunities can we take out of that particular scenario in order to secure whatever reforms that we have? I think sometimes we can be blinded or clouded by this sort of instability and discomfort. But let's remember that some of the things that were in the MOU, we would never have gotten if not for a weak government. So the fact that there are certain things that have been done, yes, certain things have not been done, but I mean, let's celebrate what we do have, right? So the fact that the voting age has been lowered to 18, the fact that we have automatic voter registration, the fact that we are even considering and putting the narrative out there of limiting the Prime Minister's term. So this would have never been imagined under, say, you know, the first term of Dr. Mahathir Mohamad. Or if BN had continued in place, I don't think this conversation about limiting PM's term would have come up. However, I must say that a caveat here is that our institutions must work well. So in order for us to see economic stability, and ultimately that's what we care about now because of the post-pandemic situation, if minority governments, which require, you know, MOUs or this kind of negotiation, policy negotiation, if that is to succeed, it requires certain things where the institutions of government, bureaucracy, administration, civil service, the agencies concerned, all of them need to play ball. So they need to also appreciate that policies should continue. Don't stall just because there is a weak government in place. I think what we're seeing now is the erosion of institutions after more than 50 years of BN in power. And so everyone seems to be waiting for the restoration of a strong majority government before things can move. But if that's not going to happen, we need to live with that reality. And, you know, face it, these scenarios happen all around the world as well. There are multiple cases of post-election coalitions that are formed. And we collectively as a society need to be able to accept the very real possibility that this will be the reality of the future.
Okay, kind of growing pains for our democracy. Tricia, can I ask you, I mean, we spoke to Dr. Sri Azalina a few minutes ago, and she said, well, the MOU is not a legal binding contract. But I'm wondering if, from your perspective, if the MOU is in fact terminated before its expiry, do you think there might be repercussions for the Ismail Sabri government?
If the MOU is terminated before its deadline, I think, yes, there will be repercussions. I think firstly, the public will not have any faith in any potential future MOUs. So if, say, election is happening in 2 or 3 months' time, and again, we have this minority government and which requires an MOU of some sort, I think the public will always question, you know, you were able to terminate this MOU before. How much trust can we place in this new MOU? And therefore, that will also subject the government in power to a lot more scrutiny. And it will lead to, I think, a lot more instability than it needs to. So, I think there is a kind of like a bare minimum of what kind of stability we would be able to accept as far as survival is concerned, you know, making sure that things just go on as is for status quo and for regulatory predictability and all that. But I think terminating the MOU early would not lead to any gains. So I think what I'm saying is that this would not necessarily be a good thing for the current administration.
Right, Tricia, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa.
That was Tricia Yeo, CEO of Ideas, and that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.